Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, 5 days a week all across America and around the world. There's even 9 brave radio stations in New Zealand that pick up this show and do it on the rebroadcast, and for all of those of you listening to those archives and so on and so forth, thank you very much for doing so, and I hope you appreciate it, because you can be rest assured, in New Zealand, there's very little content like this kind of show available. And so, naturally, the Americans had to give it to us. You know, so that's the thing about the American dream. You can't be living in America anymore in order to experience it. Or you have to be asleep to believe it, as George Carlin was saying. You know, there's a whole lot of scumbaggery going on all over the world. And the whole concept of being tired of it, you know, it wears on you. Just knowing that things are bad, just knowing that there are copious quantities of scumbags out there, is something that irks each and every one of us. And if it doesn't, it frickin' well should. People devote their lives to exposing the corrupt, to trying to bring them to justice. And in my opinion, half the time, they're not the people who are employed to do so. In fact, the people who are employed to bring people to justice, judges and police and so forth, almost accomplish the direct opposite in a lot of cases. We live in a topsy-turvy world. Up is down, black is white, corrupt is just. And it's depressing for many of us to go through such a swath of the cream of the crop of filth out there, just waiting, you know, salivating any opportunity to take advantage of somebody who's in a vulnerable position. I was with my mate Phil last night, and he's getting kicked out of his house because of a lot of scumbaggery, as is the case. And it turns out that there's a whole lot of personal things going on there. Some people want to make money. Some people want to build houses. And incidentally, the one who builds the house is the one who gets their money stolen by the one who just want to make money and ain't caring about their houses. And that's what's happening to him right now. You know, 18 years of it. Building it up from something that... imagine for a moment. That's like 18 years ago. You walk into a place and the carpet is supposed to be white, but it's black. And it smells of urine. And then to go from that to turning it into a more or less a luxury apartment flat sort of thing, you know, beautiful tiles on the walls and things of that nature. And then to have all your work stolen away from you because the lady who manages the properties and the body corporate manages to get you kicked off your position as the head of the body corporate and then uses the other people around you to get you to sell out. And imagine at the same time you've got a very bad bronchial infection. You can't work for quite a long time. And you've got nothing to catch you but very good friends and so on and so forth. His mother, who's not wealthy, loaned him $30,000. A very good friend loaned him $50,000. How many of you out there who don't have obscenely wealthy contacts and things of that nature would be able to get somebody to give you something like that? The answer is not a whole lot of us. So despite the fact that he's being surrounded by the scum who are trying to rob him of his livelihood, of something he's worked on for the best part of 2 decades, he's still got people to try and catch him before he falls. Unfortunately, though, his only choice now is to have the property sold at $15,000 under value and have to move to one of his other properties, which is not yet finished, without a toilet, without a kitchen, without running water. Imagine you just spent two decades fixing up a place that you wanted to live in for a while, and then it's gone, and the only thing you got left is your other property with no running water. It's horrific, man. And he says, oh, Vinny, you know, this might not be important to you or anything enough to go on your show. And I say, well, you're familiar with the term microcosm. It's the same thing. I can guarantee you this is happening to a lot of people. Mortgage fraud and just underhanded, nasty people who just think that what you spend your life building is theirs for the taking. You know, and a lot of times these people wind up in governments or top of corporations and things like that. You know, it's just take and take and take until there's nothing fracking left. You know, they take from the small businesses and they feed this big giant machine, and we're the ones who are the meat getting ground up. And it's really quite emotional to think that it might be happening to countless others at the same time. When did society get so wrong? When did things change? At what point did people suddenly sit up and go, you know, this entire world is fracked? The people who are the least capable of caring, the least capable of loving, the least capable of producing any real wealth by themselves have instituted themselves as the dominant organisms on this planet. How does that happen? Well, I'll tell you how. Through scumbaggery. That's right. You don't have to play by rules if you're a scumbag. Ordinary, decent people like you or I might shy away from hurting somebody in such a way. Might think that it's dishonest. It might keep us up at night to think, I just destroyed somebody's livelihood. I destroyed somebody's life. For some reason, if you got paid 50 grand for it or something like that, well, excuse me, I've got a bit of a runny nose. It was kind of cold here in New Zealand. The problem I have with society at the moment is people's lack of giving a frack. I come right out and say it, man. Not enough people care. Right? And I care lots. And I'm really empathetic to people. To the point where maybe I overextend myself. But that doesn't really matter to me, because if somebody's in need and they're sort of alone at that point in time, then all you need really is just somebody to be there, somebody to listen to you, somebody to tell your story to, somebody to make you feel better, somebody to give you a few words of wisdom or encouragement. Just at that right time, when you're at your lowest, that's when I tend to turn up in people's lives sometimes. And I'm very grateful for the opportunity that I can help people in this way. Yet, I don't try to help people who can't help themselves. You think about it, what's the most important thing you got going on in your life right now? And you think about your friends or your family and think of what kind of crap they're going through right now. And are you more willing or less willing to go out of your way to spend a couple of hours just to have a conversation with them to make them feel better about all this crap that they're going through? Or is your life just that much more important, sitting back watching TV or whatever, that you don't want to spend a couple of hours having a conversation in the middle of the night with somebody who's all alone in the threatening world, tears streaming down their face, nobody cares about me, they're all coming in, they're taking from me until there's nothing left? You know, I don't think it's right to just let people hang out to dry like that. Have no loyalty for the human race anymore, do we? It's like to know that people don't care, not to think, not to theorize, but to know that people don't care is very, very hard to deal with. But on that same token, you can be fracked over for significant periods of time, maybe even your entire life. But all it takes is just one person to go out of their way for you, and suddenly faith in humanity is restored. Isn't that interesting? How it takes a lifetime of abuse and neglect to mess with your faith in humanity, and it only takes a moment of mutual respect to get it back. And I think we should all be cognizant of this. Are people whinging just because they're not taking personal responsibility? Or are they really hurting because forces outside their control, people who operate outside the bounds of morality, are purposefully destroying their life for their own personal gain? Those are the kind of people that you should be really trying to help out in some way, shape, or form, whatever you can. I had the realization that I'm a very, very damaged person, and doing this radio show is actually a form of therapy for me. The comedy and things of that nature, it's not actually, I wouldn't say it's not real. You know, I do like to have a good laugh. But just beneath this, happy, go lucky grinning dude is a festering rage, like extraordinary anger. That's what's right underneath my skin pretty much at all times. I hate what happens to people when they're left out in the cold. And I hate that it happens more often than not. I hate the people who do this. I hate the people who lie. I hate the people who cheat. I hate the people who steal. Hate is not too strong a word, because they are the very lowest and the scum of humanity. You can't sit back and go, you know, I want to help people and whatever, and I don't want to focus on the bad things because that's just negative energy. Look, if all you're doing is focusing on the positive things, believe me, all you're doing is letting yourself be wide open to attacks from the outside by scumbaggery agencies of some kind. There's very little you can do as soon as somebody who doesn't play by any rules comes after you. Very little you can do. Often it doesn't even matter how much documents you've got, how much evidence you've amassed on these people. How much effort do you really have to go through in order to protect yourself from somebody who's destroying you? And the answer is a hell of a lot. And it's just not fair. It's just not fair. And a lot of the things that are going on in today's society, they're not our fault. I get really upset when I hear people criticize ordinary men and women and call them sheeple and say that this entire system is their fault because they haven't been doing enough. It's like, you scumbag. How dare you, you know, dump on the public like that? Sure, they might be dumb and brainwashed and so on and so forth and getting the government they deserve. But what was the likelihood that they were going to wake up? It's an extremely small minority of people who have actually cottoned on to the fact that this entire thing is a scam. And I think when you recognize that there are a lot of eclectic influences from your education to your family unit breakdown and so on and so forth, it's a wonder any of us have woken up at all. And we should be fracking grateful. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
I got some so-called friends. I'll smile right to my face. All when my back is turned. They like to bury me without a trace. Oh, no, no. Oh, no, no.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. The caller lines are now open. The phone number is 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. If you would like to call in and discuss some form of scumbaggery or anything that happens to people that you love and how you help them in some way, shape, or form. Because I think, you know, we've got to help each other a lot. That's what a voluntary society is, I think, really based upon, is moralistic, decent people helping other decent people get through ordinary Shiite Muslim. Yeah, that's the best of us. I think anyway. I could be wrong. Maybe the globalists are right. That, oh, we're all just dumb animals and we don't deserve anything, you know. We should just be exterminated and have the fluoride increased and so on and so forth and be vaccinated. Have our eyeballs pulled from their sockets so that we can't see the scumbaggery. No, I don't think so, man. You can just think about the mentality. Okay, all right. What would have to happen to you to make you think that 90% of humanity should be exterminated because they're not of any valid use to you? No, I mean, really think about it. How many bad experiences does it take before you assume that everybody's out to get you, that nobody's worth your time, and in fact, nobody's even worth the air that they're breathing. Nobody's worth life. And it's worth exterminating. It's worth torturing. It's worth manipulating. Yeah, think about that. Would you have to be sexually abused as a child? Would you have to have all of your family and friends dump on you your entire life? You know, try to be the only one to try and get people through and having nobody to pick you up when you get knocked to the ground. That could really frack you off, couldn't it? It could make you hold a pin on your fellow man and think to yourself, hey, everybody else, frack you. I'm the most important person in the world and nobody else has any value of any kind. I could understand how somebody might turn out like that if there's nobody to show you a different direction. I mean, let's say you are born in an alleged bad neighborhood and the only people you ever got to associate with were bad people. Criminals. And I ain't talking about criminals like, oh, he's smoking a J or selling a bit of weed on the street corner or something like that. I'm talking about like real criminals. Like people who will knife an old lady and steal her handbag kind of criminals. If those are your role models, if that's what you got to look up to, fracking no wonder you turned into a psychopath. You know, you've got to be examples to people around you because you influence everything around you. Everything. Well, I wouldn't say everything. Our influences are very limited, aren't they? Our actions, there's only so much you can do. We can't all be Olympic pole vaulters. We can't all be talk radio show hosts. Who the frack would do any of the real work? And that's another thing. Is people have this idea of their favorite talk radio show host or favorite TV show or something of that nature, and they feel as though there's this relationship that is being built through this medium, when it's actually one-sided. You know, this whole thing it's called in the film business the fourth wall. When you go back and you directly address the audience and you break character and you let people know, hey, this wasn't real. It was just a movie that we made up to distract you for a couple of hours. I've also really worried that people take these relationships with radio show hosts who they don't even talk to seriously enough to go out and tell other people what they've heard on the radio. As if it was their own thought, as though a friend told them, and that kind of thing, without doing any of their own research or cross-referencing to back it up, and come out and say, absolutely sure of yourself, absolutely sure of yourself, you know, because this radio show host said it, and so on and so forth. And it's just, you know, you can trust credible sources and so on and so forth. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. But what I have a real problem with is devotion. Absolute devotion without any real relationship being built. You know, and that's a concern of mine, because I see this happening all over the place, and this is just a general theme across the whole of society. People got relationships with people they don't even know. You know, everybody knows who Angelina Jolie is, or was. She's half a woman now, as I hear it. But she doesn't know who any of us are. You know, she never met us, talked to us, that kind of thing. And I'm just wondering, how do you reconcile that? How do you reconcile fame, fortune, etc., and the amplification of your presence? Because if you can, say, for example, physically be there and give somebody a hug or something like that, you can't somehow broadcast a hug, can you? You can't be there for everybody. If it's in some kind of a digital medium, all you really got is the voice and all the visual, and it's very limited in that regard. Because people need a lot more than just the visual, than just the audio. You know, people want real human contact. And whether or not they realize it, that's what we all need. Really, isn't it? Just to have fun and actually really care about somebody and know that somebody really cares about you. Suddenly, hey, life doesn't suck so much. And life expectancy kind of proves this. Married men tend to live longer. I have my theory about that. Honey, don't smoke that. Don't drink that. You know, that kind of... I'm sorry, baby, if you're listening. But you know, it's the same thing. It's very difficult if you're a man to keep self-destructive bachelor habits if you're not a bachelor. You know, you can't go out drinking every weekend because you've got to be home with the missus on the couch. You know, holding hands or something while you're watching a movie together under a blanket. You know, that's actually a lot more healthy for your body. Incidentally, it's not exactly healthy, of course, than going out and getting plastered off your frickin' face, looking for some description of wet hole to stick your wick in. That doesn't matter if you have a love or a lust when you don't have anybody at all, does it? Because you've got an empty space there, an empty space that you forever try to fill with something else. And you never fill it. Just like advertising. You get advertised, you see this car, oh mate, that car's great. Imagine how many bitches I could get with that car, bro. With the 22-inch rims. Yeah. Yeah. I see this gangster culture coming up. And I was just thinking, man, what a brilliant way to poison ethnic communities with propaganda, BS, take them away from it. Like the Islander communities here in Auckland. They would be overwhelmingly Christian and religious, yet what I see as a very unfortunate consequence of the breakdown of the family unit is that you now have disaffected youth who have a lack of proper male role models to teach them how to be real men, who go off and see that this whole gangster culture is the thing, isn't it? Have you noticed? And last night we were talking about alcohol in Otahuhu. It's an ethnic community here in Auckland. It's the cheapest alcohol in the city. Now, why is that? Well, I got a theory for you. It's to destroy those ethnic minorities. Alcohol destroys communities. Has done so for a long time. A long time. The more alcohol that's out there, the better, as far as the New World Order is concerned. And I hear about these black neighborhoods in America who have, you know, a liquor shop on one corner, gun shop on the other. So you got these disaffected youth again running from one to the other, shooting their friends. And now the highest killer in poor black communities is homicide. Could you imagine walking down the street and thinking, you know, the most likely thing that is going to happen to me when I die is I'll be shot and buried in a wooden box for the money in my pocket. And you try and blame somebody else for it. You know, oh, he should have gotten himself out of that community. We can't get out of these communities, man. We're all stuck, aren't we? You know, like economic bondage. Way back in the day, slavery involved the use of chains around your wrists. About 100 years ago, slavery used to be about your time clock and punch cards. Got to be here at a certain time, punch in, punch out. And now we're being enslaved by iPhones and distracted by music. The game has not changed. for quite some time. And the communities are suffering, really. And I see these community groups. There was this TV3 debate, The Vote, a couple nights back. And one of the people on the negative team, the vote was about whether or not you should decriminalize cannabis and legal highs that we have here in New Zealand. And on the negative team, they had a, I believe it might have been Samoan or something, but anyways, a community leader representing the Maori and Pacific Island people, really, and saying that marijuana should never be legalized because it destroys the youth, it takes away their lust for life. And, you know, he's got a point. But had those youth some kind of positive role model in their life, they wouldn't be that prone to drug abuse. Did you know that if you haven't had your father around, if you're a boy and you haven't had your father around for all or most of your life, you're something like 7 times more likely to get a criminal conviction? 7 times more likely. Because you don't have that positive role model, that positive example in front of you. This is a goal. This is what a man is. This is how it's supposed to be. Your parents are your model for everything. If you're a mother, your daughter is going to wind up like you. And she's going to wind up being attracted to a man who's much like her father. Just like boys. A boy will wind up much like his father and be attracted to a woman that's similar to his mother. It's a funny thing, isn't it? Because that's how stable family units are really bonded. Because you imprint your children with what you're doing. And if you're imprinting them with violence, if you're imprinting them with abandonment, if you're imprinting them with crime, if you're imprinting them with drug dependency, what do you think you're possibly going to gain out of that relationship? What do you think? Sure, there's people who have gone through that scenario and come out the other side, spent time in prison, and suddenly realize, you know, I have to turn my life around, and sure enough, they do. But for the majority of people, it doesn't seem to work like that. I don't know what it is about some people that just are maybe clued up enough or lucky enough to have an experience that teaches them something that's very profound and changes the entire direction in their life. I would like to find out what that element is, you know, isolate it, synthesize it, inject it into people by any means necessary. Imagine that, like some kind of a testosterone booster in not so many words. Something that you can literally make people improve their own lives by their own volition, hard work, dedication, by their own thoughts. It'd be lovely if we could do that. But that ain't the truth. Truth is, most people don't come out the other side. I don't think so anyway. I think that the damages that we encounter in our lives also imprint on us just as much as our parents' behavior would. And sometimes that damage is too much to bear, and you can't go on. It's a sad, sad state of affairs. It's all predicated upon the premise that most people have stopped giving a frack. But you can make a difference if you do. We'll be right back. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Caller lines are open, 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. And, you know, what's been big in the news recently is this the soldier getting beheaded by two Muslim men. And I was listening to Dr. Kevin Barrett's show before mine this morning, and he was talking about Islam and how a good portion, if not the majority, of the Islamic population believes 9/11 was an inside job, that it was a orchestrated event to demonize Muslims. And that he made another point, which I found particularly interesting and very profound, which I think relates to this case a bit, is that terrorism backfires unless it's false terrorism. Haven't you found that interesting? Right? Let's say that there were 19 guys with box cutters who managed to hijack planes and steal, you know, blow up the World Trade Center on TV. And the whole point of warfare is to convince your enemy to not want to fight. Did that work for Islam or for Muslims in general, had that been the case? Did America suddenly go, oh my God, they've dealt us a big death blow. Let's sit back and not fight them. They're too scary. No. They went freaking crazy. It's United We Stand and freaking Puff Daddy. You know, I mean, if anything screams American togetherness, it's obviously Puff Daddy. You know, I've got some gargantuan flag that I'm waving around. Isn't that nice? See, I don't get it because it's ridiculous. Anybody who has any clue about terrorism of any kind knows that it will frickin' backfire the frack out of you. Unless, of course, you're faking it and blaming it on somebody else. All right? It either backfires on you if you're genuine, or it backfires on your enemies if it's false. That's terrorism. Look it up in the dictionary. Oh, what's that? Oh, yeah. It's a system of government, incidentally. That's right. Terrorism's a system of government that uses fear and coercive tactics in order to get the population to vote or do things that it wants. Who does that sound like? Sounds like every freaking government in the Western world, doesn't it? People would argue with me, and they're wrong. Okay, if you think that fear and intimidation isn't the mainstay of Western society, try arguing with a cop. You know, try telling them to put down their shield and stop being some kind of jackboot thug for the system. You'll get that jackboot down on your skull. You'll smash your head in, chuck you in the cells for a night. And this happened to me as well. I was just being laughed at. That was what really ticked me off, is that they threw me in the cells, and you could hear them just laughing at me down the hall kind of thing. You know, just callous scum. And I'm not throwing all cops under the bus here. I mean, some of them aren't corrupt. You know, there's probably one or two. And they're retired. You know, it's just the system forces you to act a certain way, doesn't it? You know, here's your training programs. Here's your protocols. Here's your little sheets of paper and BS. Here's your secret meetings with the chief as he tells you to do certain things that you're not supposed to do under the Constitution. But hey, if we want to meet our quotas, that's what we've got to do. You know. I remember Danny Panzella on the show yesterday, and it was pretty enlightening about the NYC, NYPD, a bit of corruption there, a bit of the old NYPD blues. come on. Well, what possesses you? And this is the thing. What possesses you to go into any form of public service? You know, like, you know what possessed me to, you know, try and serve the public, at least in my own small way with the radio show, is partly because of the fact that, hey, I really wanted to help people. Okay, now, fortunately, I've weaseled my way into an industry that actually does try and help people. Whereas if I were to try and get myself into, I don't know, some kind of officialdom position where the stated intention is to try and help people, but you don't wind up even having anything of that nature happen, invariably. You wind up cracking people over the skull for no good fracking reason, searching them illegally, sending basically traumatizing innocent, otherwise law-abiding citizens. And they're bullies, you know? I mean, I was at this Trans-Pacific Partnership protest, and there's one cop in particular. You all know the type of cop I'm talking about. Just hands-on. No warning, no nothing. Okay, like, police line moves everybody back from the building. And a couple of protesters get caught behind the police line. And sure enough, they're walking towards it so they can leave with the rest of the protesters. And I'm on the other side of the cops filming. And this elderly lady is moving towards the police line, trying to make her way through, and then this frack comes up behind her and just shoves her as hard as he can. And if she hadn't have crashed right into me, she would have fallen flat on her face and probably knocked her teeth out. You know, thank God I was there, the big cushiony Vinnie Eastwood to break her fall. And then the guy does the similar thing to me. Like, I have this wireless microphone. Oh, here it is right here. Wireless microphone, right? And it's sticking out of my camera bag on my hip. So all you can see is the rounded tip of the microphone. You can't see the microphone bit, you know. All you see is this kind of stick coming up. And he marches across the street. You know, the protest is freaking over. They made me walk all the frack way around the block in order to come and get my freaking car back, which had the megaphone on top of it, which they moved and scratched the hood of my car and didn't fracking apologize, the scum. And he tries to rough me up and just kind of, like, grabs at it. You know, like, what is that? What is that? What the hell do you think, mate? Didn't you see me talking through the megaphone for, like, the entire fracking protest? Didn't you see me with the camera as you shoved an old lady into me, you fracking scumbag? Hate people like that. Just violent, getting I hate it when people put their hands on me. I hate it. I used to be a really violent kid, and I haven't laid a finger on anybody since the age of 15, when I suddenly realized, hey, every time I hurt somebody, I wind up getting in massive trouble. Even if I didn't start the fight, I'm the one who always gets in trouble. So I haven't touched anybody since. And so whenever somebody fracking touches me, it makes my blood boil. I'm a fracking peaceful person. And I said in a segment or two previously that underneath this glossy veneer of smiles and happiness and bubbliness that I normally have here, there's just a massive, kindling, burning kettle of rage. And it really comes out if you fracking touch me. And I don't, and I can't hit him, you know. Somebody comes up to you wearing a uniform and violently assaults you, you can't do anything back to the frack. Or you'll get killed. You know, you're shot dead in the street because he started it and you defended yourself. That's society in a nutshell. If you've got a fracking uniform on, some kind of hat maybe with skull and crossbones on it or an SS uniform or something like that, suddenly you can touch whomever you want. And I hate security guards too, like that. Always laying their frickin' hands on you. There's no, oh, excuse me, can you move over there, please, sir? And you go, oh, yeah, no problem, mate. It's just shove or grab you by the arm and push you in some frickin' direction. How dare you touch me? You violent little cock. I'm sorry, I apologize, but, you know, this has happened to me a number of times, and I'm sick of it, man. I really hate it when people get treated like this way. And I'm sure everybody else is really sick of it too. You know, what is these people's frickin' problem? What makes them think that your body is their property to push around and shove as they will? What am I, a slave? I'm not a fracking slave. You fracking scumbag. How dare you? I mean, the audacity. The audacity of it, eh? I don't understand what. Where did they get this sudden urge? It's like, you know, I could use my words and ask somebody politely, but no, I'd rather force them rather than ask them. And force is a poor substitute for persuasion. We'll be right back.